Call the meeting to order. For the best story,
yeah,
we're going to have a regular session. August 6, 2024. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Hill.
Present.
Commissioner Spence.
Back.
Commissioner Rome.
Here.
Commissioner Campbell.
Here.
And Commissioner Stevens.
Here.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And today we're going to start off with commission reports. Commissioner Campbell.
I have nothing.
Mr. Rome.
Attended the Placid County Fair. This last week was, I thought, a great fair. It was a good event. I was there, a good kids were there. But even that side, it was, I thought, a really great event.
Mr. Spence, I know there's an item on the agenda dealing with the customs and border control, but just a preliminary comment that because of their position, their action, three Princess cruise ships have already canceled for the fall, and three more next year, which will represent a loss of substantial revenue to the port and to others. But I have additional comments. Thank you. Mr. Hill? Well, to catch everybody up, I did attend Congresswoman Bonamici's meeting with the Port of Astoria with the Director Eisen, and I'm going to let the Director provide details on the substance of that meeting. Just a report, it was a good meeting. She was attentive and interested. She kept notes, and she perked up once or twice when we told her about some of the problems we're doing. But she seemed wanting to know more about the committee, who was probably just so much time. And then she didn't seem to be aware of the customs debacle that we're here with customs shaking us down. So, a bit more detail from Commissioner, from Director Eisen. I also attended the Representative Giovanni Town Hall last Thursday at Classic Community College. There were about 30 or 40 people there. Mayor Valenciefer from Warrenton and Commissioner Cuella from the Placid County Commission was there. Lots of lesser luminaries in the audience, but there was many questions and discussions with the assembled in the audience. Biggest concerns I could hear from what was asked would be the environment and education stances for Representative Giovanni, but there were two comments on the Port of Astoria, surprisingly. Then, on the other hand, one of the comments was made by Mr. John Lansing, and I would expect him to make add something to say. But the other comment, both of them were favorable. They both asked about what plans were, expecting Giovanni to tell them a little bit about how much money he's going to try and find for Port of Astoria. In addition, I have been working with staff and Representative Divide to get him to resurrect a meeting with the port. So we're working to put that on the calendar, just like we did a year and a half ago with then Representative Weber. So we're looking to host the representative here in September. We sent out a tentative date of 27 September, waiting for him to come back with agreement or give us an alternative date. But it'll be one of those things where we bring him in and sit down, talk to him, give us our concerns one by each, and then have a working lunch and then cart him off to the airport so he can go home. He'll take most part of the day. And that's all I have to report. Bunker. Are there any changes or additions to the agenda? None proposed. Public comment. These are for items on the agenda when not covered by a public hearing. This is an opportunity to speak to the commission for 3 minutes regarding any item on the agenda. Any public comment, Arts?
No comments.
Okay, we'll just proceed on. We've arrived at the consent calendar. We have the financials for June 2024 estimated and the event calendar.
Chairman, I move we approve the consent calendar as presented.
Move along.
A second, and I have a comment.
I have one question, Melanie. It comes from, I asked Debbie to reach you to help me out, and she suggested I ask why the net income loss is a different number at the bottom of page 4, as it's a different number from the retained earnings, net income.
Good catch. Yeah, that was a good catch. I reran the reports a couple of times, and at one point I reran the P&L report, and I didn't update the balance sheet report. So that was a good catch. So the net income on the profit and loss is correct, and the balance sheet net income will be updated to reflect that. So, and these are estimated. I probably would have asked for a correction, but the commission will see it. They set up reports.
I'll try and correct
that. He did it. That's a good dash. He did good. Yeah.
No, that's it. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the report is for the really fiscal year of 2023 and 24, which ended June, but it was very good, very optimistic, and during that period it showed a gain in revenues of over $2 million. And Adaki's revenues are up, our lease and rentals income was up, rebuild expenses were up. We enjoyed a settlement with Story Federal Forest Products for $250,000. So we ended the year profitable note, and congratulations to the staff and administration for making this happen and keeping not only within the budget, but making a good profit over the past fiscal year, and hope we continue.
Okay. That concludes our discussion. All in favor of accepting the consent calendar, say aye.
Aye.
Not opposed. Unanimous. We have one action item. U.S. Customs and Border Protection letter. Let's start off with Director Isom again, updating us on where we stand.
Thank you, Commissioner. So if you turn to page 10 of your packet, you will see a draft version of the letter that staff has put together regarding some of the issues we're dealing with Customs and Border Protection. And so with that, I'd first like to give Director McGrath a chance to give kind of a brief summary overview of the timeline of events and how we got to where we're at now. And then we also have our cruise ship marketer, Bruce Connor, in attendance as well.
Thank you. So this goes back to some meetings that we've had. We started over a year ago with Customs and Border Protection when they first came to us on the terminal side and said because of their new biometrics and their streamlined and simplified process, they needed new equipment. Their equipment was old. They didn't have adequate internet bandwidth, didn't have what they needed, didn't have personnel to process. And so what Customs and Border Protection suggested to us was that we, as a port, need to engage in their RSP. So that's their reimbursable services program. And through this program, what would happen is the port would basically cut Customs and Border Protection a check for all of the different computer infrastructure you see on page 10. So you're looking at 3 desktop computers, 6 24-inch monitors, 10 high-performance laptops, 10 integrated biometrics, print scanners with brackets, 10 passport readers, 10 webcams, 10 portable ports, super speed mini USB hubs, a Cisco 48 port switch, and a Dejero gateway, internet gateway bundle. The interesting part about this was that the port would have no control over any of it. And even when the port was able to purchase this equipment, there would be no guarantee that the processing times would be reduced. So and this has been the struggle with this this program is that when the CBP came up with the simplified arrival process, it means more expensive processing and less efficient processing. So when we went back and forth with a number of meetings, we met with local personnel, we met with regional personnel, we met with some of the higher ups. I know Bruce has actually met with some of the federal folks, the number one biometric person in the nation. And our concern was that there was no real reason for us to spend any of this money. There's going to be no guarantee for any processing improvement. So again, the number of meetings that we had with CBP were not very fruitful. We just, at the end of the different meetings, we just intimated to them that we're not going to subsidize the federal agency. We're just not willing to do that. I know that there are other ports that have spent this type of money, but these are places like Port of Seattle, Port of San Diego that have hundreds of cruise calls every year. And so when you look at the line item on our budgets versus theirs, the percentage of what the revenue means is vastly different when you're comparing ports like the Port of Astoria to Seattle and San Diego. So the thought was to put this letter together to just capture some of the dynamics of what's going on with the relationship with meetings, use this as a bit of a marketing tool. One to speak to people locally, how it's impacting the economy, and then also as a bit of a flyer that we can send out to people like Congresswoman Bonamici, to our senators, to tell them what we're dealing with and see if they can offer any assistance. Like Commissioner Stevens alluded to, when we brought this up to Congresswoman Bonamici, she didn't seem to know anything about it, and she did not seem very happy about it either. So with that, I guess I'll turn it over to Bruce. Do you have anything to add?
I think what I'd like to do is, first of all, thank you, Melanie. We spent a lot of time on this. This is a separate issue. So what Matt has been working on is the amount of money, the responsibility of the port to purchase equipment for the Customs Border Patrol that's needed to clear the ships. I'm going to talk about clearing the ships, and this just recently happened when I was in Miami. I heard from Princess Cruises, a friend of mine, saying, well, what's going on with that story? And Princess Cruises was just talking about canceling their ships coming from Victoria. But that's not all calls, but that come from Victoria to clear customs at our port. And so it normally is a 2-hour process to clear the passengers. They're here for 8 hours. It takes 2 hours to clear them. It's normal and customary in any port. And in this situation, because of this new equipment, because this is all to do with biometrics, with facial identification. But right now that's happening in LA and San Diego, Seattle. Not so much Frisco. They don't have ships coming from a foreign port like we do. Nevertheless, until Astoria has had five or four calls this year, which they canceled, and they also canceled next year. This is just for fall because the ship move up in the spring. They reposition in the spring. They cruise the last of the waters all spring, then they reposition. And on the way back, because they're foreign flag carriers, they have to go to a foreign port. They stop in Victoria, then they come to Astoria. Well, our problem is they have now taken 6 hours, up to 6 hours to clear passengers. The passengers have written letters to Princess. This is just Princess now that's made a decision.
None of the other guys have heard about it. I'm talking to them and I'm demonstrating with Princess that we're going to fix it working together with CBP. I mean, this is urgent. So I don't want this to get in the industry that they're having bad stories having delays, because we have other cruise companies that do the very same thing. Right now, it doesn't seem to be a problem. It's the larger ships that take the time. So I met with the head of this whole thing in Miami. He was down at Sea Trading Club with his helper, Maria. She came here and it personally and viewed what was going on. They had 14 people. It still took them 5 hours to clear because their equipment is just not up to stuff. They don't know about it. It's happening all up and down the coast. They're really struggling with this new requirements. But we're getting beat up over it. So we've explained this to CBP and we explained this to Princess. You guys got to talk. You're killing us out here, because if the other cruise lines are going to leave this whole industry, it just becomes a problem. You keep in mind, I got this very important. We're just talking about the ships that have to go to Victoria and come down. So for an example, from 22 ships we had next year, instead of 16. For the where we had 11 ships this fall, we're down to six. So that's what's happening. That's the business. But that's just Princess. There's a ship that was coming here six times next year, and they canceled. And we immediately just assumed that they heard the rumor, and they were coming to Victoria. And that's correct. But it's Viking Cruises, and they were going to call on Australia six times, but they chartered the ship. And it's going to stay in Europe. It's not going to come to the last lot. So that has nothing to do with it. That rumor we want to spoil, so that's out. So my job is to help these guys and work with CBP. And I just talked today, and they explained that I told them I'm coming to this meeting, and I'd like to give something positive. They feel confident that they'll be able to work something out. They have some ideas, which I think some of them kind of make sense to me. But the issue is, it's the ships, the same ship, the Bliss, Norwegian Bliss that goes to LA, is cleared in LA in 2 hours. Why can't we clear it here in Astoria? Well, first of all, they have 15 agents that clear all these people. We cannot get 15 agents down here. So that is the kind of the crux. If you really peel the onion, that's really the crux for them to come up. Why would you hire another 10 agents to come down here for six times a year? So I'm just being honest with you. That's kind of where we're at. And so I think there are solutions out there. They have traveling teams that can come down here and support. So I think that's going to be kind of the resolution, but it takes so long. I talked to them and he told me, he said, the president, the chairman of this said, give me 2 weeks. Well, in the government, 2 weeks, it appears it happened just 2 days. So it's 3 months to them, and it's, you know, 2 weeks to them, whatever. So that's where I'm at. That's my report. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer for these guys.
One more thing I'd like to emphasize, and Bruce touched on it a little bit, but on page 11 of your packet, there's a personnel section of the letter. And to me, this is a bigger issue than the capital equipment, because the equipment, even if we philosophically don't agree that the port should be subsidizing this agency and purchasing equipment, if you were to just look at the financial model, you could maybe make a case that it's worth it. However, when you get to the personnel section and see that due to inadequate staffing, the CBP would be requiring the port to fund personnel to come out of Portland, Vancouver at a rate of $200 per hour and a minimum of 10 hours per person. And they're saying that with the larger vessels, it would require 10 additional personnel. So you're talking about a $20,000 charge to the port that would be recurring for any of these larger vessels, which is just, that's not financially feasible at all for the port. And that makes us a little bit unique in comparison to some of these larger ports that have more access to staffing than we do. But to me, this is a major deal breaker and something that's not even really negotiable. That's just not affordable for the port or reasonable to think we would be paying for $20,000 in labor to process passengers when we have a large vessel here.
That one of the things that has bothered me all the time, I read, what does reimbursable mean?
Does it come back?
Huh?
Yeah, that's a good question. When none of this money comes back to us, we have zero control over it.
What are we trying to
Well, it's another aspect of this is typically when the court's going to be spending that type of money, we have to go through a process, public process, about here's what we need to purchase. And we're saying we have zero control over that process either. I don't know if we can do this even through ORS.
But if you're suggesting this could be, what kind of agony that this is a partnership. They're obtaining it. This is a partnership with Port of Astoria and CBP. So this is how they approach LA. This is how they approach San Francisco, Seattle. They went to the, this is a partnership that you can participate in. To just give them a way to give the government money. And so they to help for to help pay for what they feel that we should pay for. So does that make any sense?
Yeah. I think the partnership should do with the cruise industry and have the expertise, you know, as far as doing the CBP and Princess Cruise.
And that might happen. I mean, Princess Cruise might pick up a phone call and say, guess what? We worked out, we're going to pick up the tab. Whatever, we're going to work with you. That's one of the solutions that might be down the road. Cool. For their conversation about partnering with the cruise lines to absorb some of this. Because we all win if it resolves.
Have we involved our U.S. senators directly in this? I know at least Congresswoman Bonvici is aware of this. Whether from that level it would provide help, even pressure on the customs and the Border Patrol people themselves, or to identify some offsetting money that the federal government can come up with, since they are federally amazing.
Yeah, we first wanted to bring this to the commission, get consensus on it, and then once we have consensus, is to start doing exactly that, going to senators and people that can actually help us.
If you need a motion to send a letter, approve the letter, I would make that motion. That's what it
takes. I think we should go ahead with that. During discussion, I would have thought, which is the other commissioner, thought how we actually should approach the wording in this letter. And we have the ancillary conversation about getting a community and the congressional delegation together to support us. But go ahead and make the motion.
Yeah, I would move to approve the sending of the letter. By the Port of Astoria to the relevant parties and other elected officials that will be sent to the U.S. Customs and Border Protection.
Do I hear a second? Okay. That'll include copies to our two senators and Congress. Actually, the senators and state of Washington, too.
So let's call that a second. We'll have a discussion. Go ahead.
I didn't talk about relevant representatives, so
okay,
they're not.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Got it. Yes.
A couple other items I wanted to point out. We actually, talking about our senators, Matt and I had arranged a meeting with Merkley's office last week, which they canceled. So I haven't heard if we've got a rescheduled date on that, but we're planning on addressing this issue with them as well. And then maybe Matt could touch on some of the support we're looking at getting for this letter, so it's not just coming from the port.
Yeah, obviously there's a lot of support for this type of stance, and so it's one of the things that we kind of put in going around talking to some of the business owners that would be willing to sign somewhat of a petition. Like, hey, there is support from the community, the city, the county.
Excellent. Commissioner Smith, you want to finish? Is that all you have?
Yeah.
Mr. Hill, discussion. Yeah, where is your support coming from?
A lot of local businesses.
City?
Yeah, in the city.
The county.
Good. Anything else, Commissioner Rowe? Well, to the staff, I think we got a question. What do we want to just send an inquiry to Customs about this process and make some suggestions or get a little stronger and demand that they change their procedures because it's harming us so much and we cannot comply? I think we've got the background here to justify that. Maybe the way to go would be to send this letter with a beginning statement to that effect, and then attach
a document to it, so we have more or less a one page or a page and a half at the most letter, and then an attachment which gives all of these figures here. I think we hit the nail on the head with this idea of community support. You know, this is a community issue. It's not just, we are only the vehicle, we're the vessel. It's the whole region here, beyond the county, everywhere you send all the passengers benefits from these cruise ships, yeah. And they will feel the harm from it, then there's no way we can afford this. We're a small port, we're a happy little port, but we can't subsidize all this stuff, and it seems to be a question of propriety that we fund the federal government from our, you know, the cruise ship. This doesn't make any sense to me at all. But we need the congressional support, we need the local community and local political organization support. And I'd like to include Warrington. I think we're the city of Astoria, of course, the county commission. We need to line them all up. And that's going to create a lot of work for you, I know. But we don't keep this material. We just buy it. We rent it from them. We pay them to rent it from them.
It's reimbursable in that we buy it for them and they don't need to reimburse us, I guess.
Well,
they give us the junk back.
Yeah. No,
we're
reimbursing them.
Yeah, we are.
And I just stress, I forgot to say one thing, how important it is, the relationship that we have, the local three gentlemen here, CVP, are absolutely on our side. They get it. They're unbelievably apologetic, and they're cooperating tremendously. So I just don't want the community to start pointing fingers at them because it's higher up. So I just want to be clear.
Good point. Fair enough. Further discussion. You have a motion before us. It's been seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
None opposed. It's unanimous. Go forth with the letter. And I think the implied activity that goes with it.
Thank you.
We're not approving it yet. We're not going to item 9, public comment for non-agenda items, and this is an opportunity to speak to the commission for 3 minutes regarding port concerns not on the agenda. Anyone?
No comments.
Executive Director, do you have any comments?
Thank you, Commissioner. So I have a number of issues I wanted to discuss, and some of these are going to be a little bit more lengthy than normal, so maybe after I get through each one, if there's questions or comments, we can talk about those. The first one, and it's hard to believe that we haven't met since we had our DEQ enforcement meeting, but July was a 5-Tuesday month, so we had a little bit longer break than normal. But the day after our last meeting in July, so July 17th, Matt and I traveled to Portland to meet with DEQ. And important to note, this wasn't an appeal hearing. This was an enforcement meeting that eventually could lead to a hearing to discuss the recent enforcement letter that we received from DEQ regarding Pier 2. Also receiving enforcements were two of our tenants on Pier 2 as well. And so we met with DEQ for approximately an hour. And I think we did a good job of laying out some of the issues we had with the enforcement. Talking about, and this wasn't new for DEQ, but talking about different processes that are underway around Pier 2, around construction, around our plans for the future for both wastewater and stormwater. And then two, some of our concerns moving forward of how we can not continue to run the risk of additional enforcement actions when some of the things outlined in the letter are just not easily fixable in the short term until we get the construction completed and repairs that are needed on Pier 2, especially when it comes to containing stormwater. It's a real challenge to adequately contain stormwater when there's large gaps and cracks in the pier, and we have steel plates that are covering some of those imperfections. It's just nearly impossible to completely contain that. And so what we did discuss between now and the end of construction was the potential to have a memorandum of agreement between the port and DEQ for what the expectations might be between then and now. And so I did provide before this meeting a copy of the response letter that the port recently sent back to DEQ. I think some of you had a chance to take a look at that. That has more detail than I'm discussing today. And then the other big issue with the actual fine amount, and they did talk about if we could provide some backup, the ability that some of those fines would get reduced because some of the maintenance and housekeeping items that were pointed out in the letter had been completed, and maybe DEQ just didn't have the proper paperwork or documentation for that. But then the discussion moved on to looking at the potential for an alternative project for those monies rather than cutting the check directly to DEQ. And so we discussed some options for things like our byproduct recovery center that we're currently looking to do a feasibility study on, whether that could be something that those funds were used for. On that, DEQ was pretty non-committal in terms of what they would or wouldn't approve. And so we're hoping that we can get this agreement in place and avoid going through a more formal hearing process where, I think it's unlikely that the port would succeed, quite honestly, because as DEQ pointed out in the meeting, if you go by the letter of the law and what the permit requires, it doesn't necessarily care that we can't implement some of that. The fact is that there are violations and they're there to enforce those violations. And so I think we're making progress, but as with most things with DEQ, things tend to move a little bit slow. But I think we did get the point across, especially of our concerns between now and say 2028, of making sure that these aren't going to be recurring fines and enforcement actions that we're receiving. Stacy, who's now working on the environmental side for the port, has been doing some great work on this. She's spending a ton of time on it. So we're really happy to have her kind of now fully invested in that. I think it's going to be helpful. As the commission knows, she's really good at communication. And so I think that's helpful that she can be communicating back and forth on a more routine basis with DEQ. So just wanted to give that update. So if there's, I guess, any questions on that, we can talk about it before I move on. Is there any?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's go ahead and pause and give the commission a chance to do that. Before we go there, for the people attending our meeting, we were fined $20,000, correct?
$28,000.
And the Yang was fined?
Theirs was, $150,000.
And Andrew Marsden,
22, and it all rounded up to an even 200,000.
Okay. Discussion. Any questions?
When was the DEQ enacted?
Oh, glad that. I don't know off the top.
Well, let's just take a shot. And when was this port built? Was it in Forest Bend? How did they calibrate that in the law? In other words, this thing was here long before DEQ came.
I think they were 1969, I think. It might be wrong.
We were built in what? 1914?
No, 11, I think it is.
1910. Something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you gauge the letter of the law to something like that? Are you forced to tear it down? Are you given time to do it? What justification under the law do they have?
Yeah, that's where it's all.
They just come in like they got a stop hole and tell you they're going to do it this way or I would hear down the road.
That's their charge.
Why don't we find out the process of that? The process they use, if I understand, it's more objective. So what they see, it's not, there's no scientific proof that there was in any way the river actually being contaminated. And if it was contaminated, you know, parts per billion, what was that level of contamination to me if you're going to hold somebody
responsible for something that's coming out of the water and then falls back in the water. But then, what's in that number? That's objective, not a subjective analysis. But that's beside the point. I think we all agree, unfortunately, what it can be a team player and be productive in a difficult situation.
Agreed.
Well, they used to dump all the blood and guts from the canneries here into the river. And we had suckers then, and we had crawdads you couldn't believe. So, and the sea lions did quite well, the seal.
Yes, sir.
Other discussion, more questions? Who is the hearing authority if we decide to go with the formal appeal?
I can't remember the term they use, but basically DEQ brings in like an arbitrator to hear the case from the polluter, in this case would be the port. And then I don't know what if there's an appeal process beyond that that would run through like the Department of Justice. Part of it too is with the level of this fine. I think the bigger concern, as I said, for the port is moving forward. How do we avoid these things? Because a prolonged battle over this is probably not in our best interest. And especially if we can get, well, which we have, we've shown evidence that some of the things pointed out in the letter either are a non-issue or they've already been remedied. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully get some reductions on those, and then in an ideal world be able to take those funds that are left over in terms of enforcement and actually put those back into some of the things we're working on that are going to ultimately solve the issues, whether that's on the construction side, whether that's the BRC, and I think that would be a positive outcome for the port.
I think that's a good direction to go. A little bit of research I did. Politically, there was difficulty in getting DEQ established. A lot of people didn't want an agency with that much authority. And I know you and I talked about this. When they established it, they did not give it a very big budget. And the process was in the trade-off. Getting complete support for establishing the agency was that, well, they will get their funding by enforcement actions. So here we are.
And I ended up failing on that, going down a rabbit trail, but there was an instance working with another agency in the Thailand areas where they were told that they needed to raise money, so they tried to assess evaluation on what the current structures include the RAP raised by the 94 in the 30s, and it was supposed to go to the state general fund, which was supposed to go to education ultimately. None of that money was going to make it to the education component to help shore up shortcomings in their own budget.
Yeah.
That had absolutely no net benefit.
All I did was confuse the issue.
Anyway.
Okay, thank you for that. Yeah, thank you for that. And we can
All right, so a few more things here. Commissioner Stevens touched on it a little bit in his comments, but a couple weeks ago we did have the opportunity to host Congresswoman Bonamici for a visit. And actually, this was part of a tour she was doing around Astoria, and this one specifically was for ports in her district. And we were expecting several more ports to be in attendance, and some of them canceled. So as it turned out, it was just the port of Columbia County and the port of Astoria who had representation at that meeting. And so it was a good opportunity to get some time with the congresswoman to talk about some of the issues we're facing, and especially on the federal side, how she could possibly be of assistance. So some of the major topics, and it was interesting because the Port of Columbia County independently came up with almost the same set of topics, different situations, but really going back to the same topics around projects and the permitting of those projects, talking about dredging issues. And then lastly, the port brought up this issue with CBP, which I think of all the things we talked about really perked her up. She was very interested in what was happening with CBP and this idea that this local agency like the port would be subsidizing their operation. And so she had requested that we get this letter together, not only to get to CBP, but also to give her her office a copy, because it sounded like she was ready to make some phone calls and she has some contacts that she was gonna pursue. And so that was, it was good to hear. And quite frankly, from the federal level, Congresswoman Bonamici has always been very supportive of the port. She was one of the primary reasons that we've received several rounds of funding for various projects. And I know even on our trips back to Washington, D.C., and getting a chance to talk with her over there and with her comments, she always makes it a point to point out the Port of Astoria and the work we're doing here. So she's been a really good ally for the port, and it's good to have a chance to host her here and do it in a fairly small gathering where we could dominate a lot of the airspace. So that was good. Next update, I did talk about at our last meeting the upcoming RFP for the hotel. And the original plan was that we were hoping this month actually to have a document in front of the commission, which was basically an intent to bid that we would get out and interested parties would, through a process, let us know that they intended on bidding on the project. And then once we had that pool of bidders, we would provide more information. We would set up some visit dates for them to tour the site, and then we would get a number of proposals coming in. We've called a little bit of an audible on those plans through our work with Popkin and also with John Southgate, who, if you remember, was pretty instrumental in working with the port and the city to get the master plan moving and offered some really good guidance on that. He's been through a lot of these types of processes. And what we had decided would be a better path forward rather than this real simple intent to bid was that instead, upfront, we would require a little more information. What we're going to be calling it is an expression of interest. And basically what this will be is a really condensed version of a proposal where we will seek information on potential developers or investors in terms of what their portfolio is, what their qualifications are, what kind of financial backing they have. And then once we have that pool, rather than having all these firms develop this, you know, probably costly proposal, is that we would base our decision more on those qualifications and figure out who we want to move forward with. And then they would expand on the information we receive from them to fully develop a proposal. And part of the reason for that, and again, this is coming from John, was that because of the scale of this project and the costs associated with putting together a full proposal, that if we required all these firms to put together full proposals, we're probably going to lose some folks that know that there might be 10 to 15 competing bids and may not want to invest the time and resources it would take to fully develop the proposal. And so this is a way to make sure we get really qualified respondents that don't have to, you know, spend a bunch of time and money on the first step. And then based on that, again, we can move forward with a more, it'll be more focused with whoever that person or that entity is to get this thing moving in the future. And so the hope right now is we'll have that to the commission next month to review the expression of interest, and then we'll move forward with that process. So I just wanted to, give an update on that because we were hoping to have that this month. And then just yesterday, actually, it was a bit of a impromptu short meeting, but we had some representatives out here from both the Port of San Francisco as well as the West Oakland Job Resource Center. They were out here doing a tour. Mostly, I think they were visiting Tongue Point Job Corps. They were looking at emulating portions of that in the Bay Area. And actually, the gentleman who was here from the Port of San Francisco, he was the equivalent of what Bruce Connor is here. He does a lot with their cruise ship terminal. And so it was interesting to get a quick opportunity to chat with them. I think Commissioner Campbell just happened to be in the office at the time too, signing checks, and had a chance to chat with them real quick on the way out. So it's always good to talk to folks from other ports, especially somewhere as large as the Port of San Francisco, to kind of hear what some of their challenges are and some of the things they're working on. So we had them out here yesterday. And then the last issue I wanted to talk about, and some of the commissioners I know are aware of this, but I wanted to make sure that the entire commission had the same information. And before the meeting, I gave you a couple documents. One of them was a tort claim notice that came from the city of Astoria's attorney, Blair Henningsgaard, regarding a pile of wood that was sold in July of last year to a gentleman named Gary Engman for a total of $2,051. And since that time, he had removed a portion of the wood that he had purchased. And part of the agreement was he was to remove the entire pile within 10 days or to make arrangements to do so, which that ultimately did not happen. And we've documented in the response letter from Attorney Eileen Akins the multiple attempts to reach out to him and to make arrangements for him to pick up what was left. As of December of last year, that still hadn't happened, so 6 months later. And so ultimately, we went through the same government surplus website to sell the remaining portion, and it sold in the amount of $760 in January of this year. And we thought that was kind of the end of it until last week we received this tort claim notice again from city attorney Blair Henningsgaard. And according to the tort claim notice, his client is valuing the property that was left over that, as I remind you, sold on a public auction for $760. He's valuing it at $412,000.
Can we make one thing clear?
Yep.
For the record,
yep.
This from Blair Hainsgard is not in his capacity as city attorney. This is as a private attorney.
That would be for Blair, I guess, to declare. I know him as the city attorney.
Yeah.
He does have a practice in town. So in terms of what capacity, I'm not exactly sure. So anyway, we've provided a response letter that details the timeline of events, the details, the contact attempts to reach Mr. Engman that ultimately failed. And then documentation for the ultimate sale of what was left over for the $760. As of this afternoon, we had not received a response from Mr. Henningsgaard. My hope is that based on the information we provided, this will go away and take care of itself. But I just wanted to make sure that the entire commission was aware that we had received this notice and that we are working to find a resolution to this matter. So that concludes my comments. I guess if there's any questions on that, I can answer them.
I would like to suggest that if that isn't satisfactorily resolved, that the court would cover all costs associated with us having to deal with this. I don't believe the court should have to pay for someone else's claims if they're not substantiated legally.
Yeah.
I appreciate your argument, really. Other questions from the commission? Okay. Thank you, Director. We do have some upcoming meeting dates. We will have a finance committee meeting on August 14th at noon. And this time, Melanie's going to feed us, right? Okay, good. Come to lunch. Will be a workshop session of the commission on August 20th and a regular session September 3rd. I also wanted to mention that 24 August, Saturday, is the fly-in, the annual fly-in at the airport. We really need to work hard and get a nice sunny day for that. We can have another successful fly-in for the airport.
24.
Saturday.
On your packet.
There's another meeting on the 17th, which has nothing to do with the Port Commission, but you are required.
You are invited.
No, he's required.
Oh, required?
Yeah. Oh. All right. Hearing nothing.
Never regard for that.
We're adjourning this meeting.